From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. President Joe Biden's first few days in office have been a welcome relief for a nation weary of political strife, dangerous and incessant lies, and a violent insurrection. On the international stage, European leaders have signaled their pleasure at the change, and even the Russian, Iranian, and North Korean governments have been cautiously open to negotiations. But the anti-war group Code Pink has vociferously opposed at least some of Biden's picks for key positions that will determine U.S. foreign policy. My guest is Medea Benjamin, co-founder of the human rights group Global Exchange and the peace organization Code Pink. She's a longtime political activist and author of numerous books, including Saudi Arabia, Kingdom of the Unjust, Drone Warfare, Killing by Remote Control, and Inside Iran, The Real History and Politics of the Islamic Republic of Iran. She's a frequent guest on our program. Welcome back, Medea.
Hi, Sonali. Nice to be on with you.
So the first Biden nominee to be confirmed was one that Code Pink opposed, and that is now Director of National Intelligence Avril Haines. And in fact, for our TV audience, we'll play a short TikTok video that Code Pink created about Avril Haines. Who is Avril Haines and why did you oppose her?
Well, we opposed her because of her past associations with both the issue of drones and torture. When it comes to drones, she was actually one of the people called in the middle of the night to sign off on the killing of people through drones. And she wrote the legal basis that normalized drones. Under Obama, we saw the proliferation of people killed by drone warfare, many of them civilians. And we feel that somebody like her, who used her legal skills to manipulate and try to fit this into both US and international law, is not somebody who should be rewarded. And then when it came to torture, she is one of the key people who redacted the very 16,000-page torture report that was put out by the U.S. Senate Intelligence Committee, so that it was left with about 500 pages and blacked out in so many places. And then on top of that, if your viewers and listeners remember that there was the incident when the CIA agents had hacked into the computers of the Senate Intelligence Committee when they were doing this investigation on torture. And she was the one who signed off that they wouldn't be punished for this very illegal act. So those are some of the reasons why we are opposed to Avril Haines. And we think it's really sad that so almost nothing of this came up during her confirmation hearing. And it just gives you the recognition that within the U.S. Congress, in the very Senate where the hacking had happened, that none of these senators thought it was important enough to stand up for somebody who allowed that to happen and kept so much of that torture report away from the public.
So as Director of National Intelligence, what would Haines oversee and what are your concerns if senators didn't adequately question her, if the media didn't do adequate media coverage of her record, how would you like her to be held accountable moving forward in terms of what we should look for?
Well, it's interesting, you know, she's in charge of all of these different 17 intelligence agencies. So it's this sprawling, uncontrollable complex that we have. And yet there is one positive element, which is the director of the CIA itself. And that's where these issues about torture and drones and the CIA having its own set of Reaper and Predator drones that you would think would be part of the military, which they are, but also the CIA using them for its extrajudicial killings. Well, they've now put a veteran diplomat, William Burns, somebody extremely respected for decades of his work around diplomacy, in charge of the CIA. So that's actually a good development. And it could be that there will be major differences between Avril Haines and William Burns. Now, Haines will be her boss, But Burns has a lot of respect in the international community and within the Biden administration itself.
The other person that your organization has opposed is Victoria Nuland for the position of Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs. And you have a similar TikTok video opposing that, which, by the way, great use of social media for getting the word out. Why is Victoria Nuland a problematic figure?
Well, she supported a coup in the Ukraine that took out a democratically elected leader and put in somebody who would be close to the United States. And as part of that, unleash this terrible civil war that has led to about 12,000 people being killed and continues today. And among the people that were part of this civil uprising were neo-Nazis that you can see in the pictures that we have of Haines with one of the leaders of the neo-Nazis. And you can imagine the kind of terrible relationship that she has with Russia, and to put her in that position after her manipulation of the Ukrainian government, her blasphemous quotes for having said, European Union, because they had a different idea of what should happen in that instance, is an indication again of not recognizing the need to really put seasoned diplomats inside the State Department so that we could have a real break with not only the Trump years, but also the Obama years, where we did not make use of the State Department in the way that we needed to. It was so much an appendage of the military. And unfortunately, with somebody like Nuland in there, it does not bode well for that particular part of the State Department's work.
The Biden nominee for Secretary of State is Anthony Blinken. Would he be Nuland's boss if both of them are confirmed? And yes. If so, what do you think of Blinken?
He's definitely Nuland's boss. I mean, let's remember that that Blinken's boss is Joe Biden, somebody who supported the Iraq war,
right,
and very much part of all the foreign policy disasters of the Obama years. But Blinken is actually to the right of Biden. He supported the invasion of Libya, which Biden was not in favor of. He supported the surge in Afghanistan that Biden was not in favor of. So he's actually to the right of Biden. And we should also explain that during the years where he was not in the administration after Obama was out, he started this lobby group called West Exec Advisors, which boasted about how they would help the corporations to get access to government contracts. And so he has been very close to many corporations, including defense contractors. And so many of the people like Blinken, like Jake Sullivan, the others who are now will be in the State Department are really retreads of the Obama years. And we feel like there should be fresh foreign policy thinking. When Biden himself talks about foreign policy, he says that the U.S. has to regain its place at the head of the table. And this is exactly what Anthony Blinken was saying during his confirmation hearings. He says, if the United States is not in charge, someone else will be, like China, or else there will be total chaos. And we can't let China be at the head of the table. And we don't want chaos. Of course, the U.S. foreign policy has created chaos all over the world. But it is this thinking that the U.S. has to be at the head of the table, leading the world. And that's very problematic. And while Biden has shown some positive things already in terms of foreign policy, like rejoining the Paris Accords, rejoining the World Health Organization, renewing the START Treaty, says that he will rejoin the Iran nuclear deal, which is extremely important, and stop support for the war in Yemen, extremely important. For the most part, what we see is a neoliberal interventionist kind of mentality.
So it's of course important to contrast what we may see under Biden to what we saw in the past 4 years. I mean, yes, a lot of it is the Biden team is from the Obama years, but we just got done with 4 years where the U.S. took the opposite approach. Forget about leading the table. The U.S. left the table, and under Trump, under Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, who brought this very dangerous Christian fundamentalist worldview to the to U.S. foreign policy, it just seems that we've sort of gone from one extreme to potentially another extreme. So what could a progressive foreign policy look like? What could an American foreign policy that's based on having a seat at the table rather than walking away from it or controlling it look like?
Absolutely. It would not be a table that has anybody at the head. It would be a round table where we're discussing with members of the world community, how do we deal with the crises that are facing us all?
So empowering the United Nations, perhaps?
Yes, and working cooperatively with China, which is extremely important. And it is worrisome that the rhetoric from the Biden administration has been one that is very confrontational with China. And that is not only worrisome because China is a huge power and you have two nuclear powers, but it's also worrisome because it is a justification for continuing with this supersized Pentagon budget that we have, and calling for more high-tech weapons to be able to confront China. So a progressive foreign policy would say that we have to work with the major powers in the world community, like China, like Russia, like all of the countries in the world, and the United Nations, to deal with the pandemic, to deal with the climate crisis, to end wars. Instead, I think, of this idea that China is a major adversary, we can say, yes, China is a competitor economically, but we have to cooperate with China and the rest of the world. And a progressive foreign policy would really put diplomacy at the forefront. Would make the State Department much more important than it has been in decades, would try to follow up on things that Trump did terribly, but at least try to initiate, which is talking to North Korea, for example, not only rejoining the Iran nuclear deal, but talking to Iran about other issues in the region. I would say even convening Iran and Saudi Arabia together to talk about the region. There are so many things that need to be done to stop the wars that we have been in for about 20 years and to prevent us from getting into new wars. And that will take a lot of pressure on the Biden administration. But I think that we can do that, Sonali, because at least the Biden administration recognizes that the number one issue to deal with right now is the pandemic. They also recognize that the climate crisis is an absolute existential threat to our future. And that gives us openings to then say how important it is that we cooperate with the world on these issues and the other existential threat, which is nuclear annihilation.
You brought up the Pentagon budget. On Friday, retired General Lloyd Austin was confirmed as Defense Secretary. He had he had to basically win a waiver from Congress in order to be confirmed, because government rules specify that there should be a civilian head to the Defense Department, and any former military member needs to have been retired for at least 7 years. General Austin was retired for only 4. Like General Jim Mattis under Trump, he was granted a waiver. What do you make of Lloyd Austin as the Defense Department head? I mean, of course, so many are making much of the fact that he's become the first Black Defense Department head. But of course, we do all remember Condoleezza Rice and Colin Powell and Hillary Clinton, and just putting women and people of color in positions of power does not guarantee progressive policies.
Well, that's right. And we had a very vigorous campaign against the person who was supposed to be the shoe-in for that position, and that was Michelle Flournoy. And there was a lot of hoopla about how wonderful it would be to have this woman, the first time, be head of the Pentagon. But she was awful, a total hawk, especially when it came to China. And so we were actually relieved when she was not picked. It's not like we can say we support General Austin. Here is somebody who not only commanded the U.S. forces during these times in battle in the Middle East when the U.S. should not have been there, but also as soon as he left, he joined Raytheon and was on the board of that enormous weapons company. So we don't support him, but we thought he was better. And there were two areas that we learned about him that we thought were certainly better. One is that he had opposed the U.S. support for the war in Yemen from the very beginning. And the other is that he has talked about the need to cooperate with China. And in fact, the hawks, and this came out during his hearing, were not wanted him to be tougher on China and really pushed him to take a tougher stand. And the Biden administration has appointed some more hawk-like people into positions in the administration that would deal with China in a way to please some of those in both the Democrat and the Republican Party who were not happy with Austin as the Secretary of Defense because he had a softer line on China.
Let's talk about Yemen. This is a war that the United States is participating in. It's most directly, of course, a war by Saudi Arabia, the close U.S. ally. And interestingly, in the last few years, there has been a rare bipartisan support in the Senate for ending, and the House for ending the Yemen war. And you had, of course, Donald Trump veto repeated attempts to end the war in Yemen. Joe Biden said last year that he would go about ending that war. What do you think needs to happen? How fast does it need to move? And are you hopeful that that will actually happen? This is a war that has claimed far too many lives, you know, being aimed at the poorest country in the Gulf Arab region.
Yes, it has to happen immediately. And that could be one of the best things that comes in terms of foreign policy from this administration is to stop the U.S. support for that war. I don't think it will be to the extent of stopping weapon sales in general to Saudi Arabia. There's too much money to be made there.
Which is what Trump very openly admitted was the reason.
Right. And even though Biden has called Saudi Arabia a pariah state, you could see in the hearings how his new Secretary of State, Anthony Blinken, walked back from that and talked about the Saudis as our ally and even said in regards to this issue on Yemen that we would be talking to our allies, the Saudis, about this. But what I think it will be is that the U.S. will not sell offensive weapons that could be used in the Yemen war. We'll push the Saudis more to stop this war. And what we also have to do is undo one of the very last things that Mike Pompeo did as Secretary of State, which was to designate the Houthis as a terrorist organization, which makes it very complicated for humanitarian aid to go to the areas that the Houthis control. So that has to be taken back immediately. And then there should be a campaign after this for the U.S. to give significant humanitarian aid to Yemen. And I would say that would be over $1 billion. Let's face it, the U.S. was responsible to a certain extent for so much of the destruction of the infrastructure of Yemen. It is our obligation to not only push the Saudis to stop the war and stop our participation, but help the Yemenis rebuild from this disaster.
Very quickly, in the last few minutes of our conversation, I want to address the situation in Afghanistan and also Venezuela, two different parts of the world. But the Trump administration tried to end the war in Afghanistan, one of the few positive things they tried to do, like they tried to do with North Korea. They did end up at the very last minute drawing down the number of troops to a smaller level, but signed an agreement with the Taliban, which may or may not already be unraveling. What does the Biden administration, from Code Pink's perspective, need to do on Afghanistan?
I don't think the Biden administration will do what we would like them to do, which is to finalize that agreement with the Taliban to push for an agreement with the Afghan government, but really to say the U.S. is going to be leaving and pulling out its troops. The same thing for Iraq. But I don't see the Biden administration doing that in either of those places. I think, unfortunately, we are going to see a certain number of U.S. troops staying in both of those places, and the U.S. continuing to refuse to admit that their 20-year militarist intervention in Afghanistan was a disastrous failure, and will instead continue, perhaps even throughout the next 4 years, to maintain a significant presence there of not only U.S. troops, but of air wars. And that is where most of the casualties are coming from. And I think it's an area where we're going to have to push very hard against this administration.
And so, and then also finally, Venezuela, where the Trump administration was under fire for recognizing opposition leader Juan Guaido as the true president of Venezuela, even though democratically elected President Nicolas Maduro remains in power. Were you shocked by the Biden administration saying that they would continue to recognize Guaido?
I think it's disgusting, and it just shows the level that the right-wing Venezuelan community has managed to work its way into this administration. And but there is one positive thing, which is that the Biden administration came out with its report on what it was going to do around COVID globally. And one of the measures is that they would do a review of sanctions in places like Iran and Venezuela to see how they affect COVID relief and then take measures accordingly. And so that is something positive that we can hopefully see some movement on, removal of some of the most egregious sanctions that are keeping food and medicines away from the people in Venezuela during this pandemic.
Well, Medea, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate your breadth of knowledge on these disparate foreign policy issues. Thank you so much. I'm sure we will have you back on many times during the Biden administration.
Thanks so much for having me on, Sonali. Always a pleasure.
My guest has been Medea Benjamin, co-founder of the human rights group Global Exchange and the peace organization Code Pink. She's a longtime political activist and prolific author, and we've been discussing Biden's cabinet and foreign policy. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.